As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Hello everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host, and this weekend in Reykjavik I'm recording on a Saturday night. I've had a pretty chill day, just relaxing. There's been a lot going on this week actually. It's not been the easiest week in the world, but that has meant that, as I tend to do, I sometimes turn to gaming in times of stress to just try and escape into the screen and get out of my own head and put my attention elsewhere. And with some success this week, I've been looking for games that are easy to play, that offer you a chance to run around and do things that you understand, you don't have to think about too much, with not too much of a big plot to follow, or anything like that. The things that I usually look for in games, like those hooks of engagement, I've not been wanting this week, and so I've been looking for a couple games that are just a little bit comfortable and a little bit cozy. And I tried out a fair few, actually, before I settled on a couple games, and a couple of them actually just dropped right into my lap. For a start, I was sent a review code for the game Ooblets. You might have heard about this one. It's been around the block on social media. It's a cute and cozy village sim with a Pokemon element and a Stardew feel, some farming, some talking to people, a bit of fishing, all of those things that we know from those games, from that type of game. And I've spent a fair few hours with it. It's just come out in 1.0, so it's out now on consoles. It's out everywhere. It's doing the rounds on social media, and that will be the featured game of the episode that I'm going to focus on later in the show. But I also played a little bit of Slime Rancher. That's a 2016 game that I've always meant to have a go with, but I've never quite felt the right mood for it. This is something that I talk about quite often on the show, is like your opinion on a game might well rely on what kind of mood you are bringing to it. Like, is it what you want in that moment? Is it the kind of game you need at that moment? Like, does it feel natural and good to be playing it? Or do you feel like it's... do you feel friction when you're trying to enjoy the game? And Slime Rancher, to me, always looked like a little simple and colourful. And I watched someone stream it for a while. A streamer that I watch sometimes called Nova Chloe was streaming this one years ago now. And it looks really enjoyable and fun and easy. It's a first-person game where you run around a little network of wild areas, hoovering up little slimes that you find, these little jolly bouncing guys that come in different colors and have different appetites. Some of them eat vegetables, some of them eat fruit. And you go out into the land and you use your vac pack, which is like a Luigi's Mansion style backpack that you can use to hoover things up with a handheld vacuum nozzle. You go out and capture them, you take them back to your farm, and then you can arrange your farm as you wish, all in first person. You can build pens for them, you can build little garden patches to grow food for them. They multiply, you can crossbreed them, and when you feed them, they fart out these little crystals, which you can then exchange for money. And with money, you can extend the scope of your farm. You can open gates to go to new areas. And it's generally a very easygoing, fun, colourful, little game with nice movement, with a little economy that you build. I guess you are trying to crack the system of the economy a little. For example, there's a marketplace where it basically looks a little bit like the stock exchange, but it has like this hole in it. It's a panel with lots of screens and a hole, and you shoot your crystals into that hole to sell them. You can see all of the different kinds of crystals that you get from different slimes all up on the boards, and their price goes up and down. So you can't farm one type forever because it will go down in price the more that you sell. You'll be flooding the market with it. So there's a little miniature economy in this game, and you have to have variety in the different types of crystals that you are farming. And so there's some thought to go into it. And I get the feeling that despite the fact that the mechanics in this one are quite simple in many ways, that a lot of people would find different ways to play it. They might find different combinations of ooblets or slimes rather. I will say that Slime Rancher and Ooblets share a lot of qualities, actually. So I have been playing these two different games that rely on farming and harvesting and little creatures and cracking the economy of the game. So you're trying to find, I guess they call it min-maxing. It's like, how can I put out the least effort for the most profit? Because profit is what's going to drive me along in the game to make my empire bigger, to make my house better, to grow my farm, that kind of thing. So Ooblets and Slime Rancher both are games that touch on that kind of gameplay. It's a little bit like the Stardew Valley gameplay, I guess, or Animal Crossing-y gameplay, where you're growing things, you're selling things, you're trying to figure out what you can grow that will get you the most money, and you're making your house nicer and all that kind of thing. And I'm not going to review Slime Rancher in depth because I thought about doing them back to back because they're so similar, and they actually make quite a nice contrast. I will say that I've enjoyed Slime Rancher more. It's got a very balanced economy and it's very slick and easy to play. Ooblets is a little bit more rough around the edges, but they do make a nice contrast. But I decided against doing that back to back Slime Rancher and Ooblets episode, because when I looked at the map in Slime Rancher, I'm still just in the basic beginner area. I've been playing it for over 15 hours in total, just here and there. And I noticed on the map that there are just so many other places that I have not unlocked yet. So I'm really just at the start of that game. And while I do have opinions about it and I've played it enough to have a good feel for it, I think it might have more to offer. It might be one of those games where my opinion on it is going to evolve over time. There's also a sequel coming up for Slime Rancher on September 22nd, which is going to be on Game Pass. So maybe when that comes around, it's time to talk about Slime Rancher and Slime Rancher 2 in more detail with a more developed opinion about them. So that's all I'm going to say about that one for now. But I will say that I'm having a wonderful time with it. And if you are seeking a cozy game that's slightly mindless but pleasantly challenging in its own way, there's like a meta puzzle of like, how can I make my farm the most optimized at the same time as just running around hoovering up these slimes. It's a really good choice. It's on PS Plus. You can get it there. It's also on everything else, and I think it's regularly on sale. It came out in 2016, so it's been around the block by now. That's Slime Rancher. And another game that I picked up to try and chill out with, I felt like running around in an open world, and I was flicking through the options that I have. I've got Far Cry 6 waiting to be begun. I've got Cyberpunk waiting for me to finish off a bunch of side quests. But those are pretty shooting heavy, pretty violent games. And so I ended up, surprisingly, even to me, opening up Assassin's Creed Valhalla, because I played 5 or 6 hours of that at the tail end of last year. And I keep meaning to come back to it when I have the time or the mood, and I'm still in the Norway beginning area. So it's a game that is largely set in England during the Viking attempted conquest of England, semi-successful. But at the start of the game, at the launch, I guess it's the training area, you know, it's the tutorial area of the game, really, is quite a large swathe of snowy Norwegian fjords with high mountains, with Viking villages, with some Viking politics going on between clans. And my experience of that game so far has been completely ignoring the story and just going for it in terms of exploring. It's a beautiful game to look at. It's very easy to move around in. The climbing is absolutely wonderful. You just can scale anything, like in Breath of the Wild, except you don't have an endurance meter. So you can literally climb any mountain you can see, as long as it's in the play area. Whilst I was playing it, actually, I thought this climbing is what I wanted in Horizon for Aloy, to just be able to easily scale and jump and parkour up walls and up buildings. It's so effortless and it feels so good to do. I actually posted a tweet of how good the climbing is. You can see that at Gaming in the Wild if you want to see it. I was just scaling a cliffside, going up ledges, mantling up ledges and leaping up, doing little double jumps and grasping onto little cracks in the rock. Effortless, wonderful. And I'm not playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla the way that it's meant to be played, I think, which is that there is a story that you follow and there's some optional stuff to do. I'm actually just running around, exhausting every little bit of the training area. And there's a surprising amount to find. There's a lot of optional stuff. There's always like a next story mission pin on the map. But as you're sailing around in your longboat and landing on jetties or jumping off the ship to go and explore an abandoned village or an interesting looking island in the mouth of a river, the mouth of a fjord, there's always something to find, and little glowing dots appear on your map. You don't know what they are until you get there. Some are small and silver, large and silver, small and gold, or large and gold, so you know roughly if they are going to be important or if they're going to be minor, like just a hidden chest. And I've just been stopping every time they appear on my map and going to see what they are. And it turns out that they're pretty fun. I will say that the opening part of Assassin's Creed games tends to be the best part, because you're still discovering the mechanics, you're still getting a feel for the personality of the game and the range of things the range of encounters and puzzles that you're going to find. And then after about 10 hours, in my experience, you've seen them all, and then they happen again and again for another 40 hours, during which you get really bored. And then there's a 10-hour finale with some good battles and story points and stuff. So I'm still in the honeymoon period of Valhalla, very willingly so. And I've had a great time. I've pulled up on a couple river islands and found a stone circle where you can take mushrooms and commune with the nature and the gods. Your character Eivor is quite mystical, quite spiritual, and quite into the Ausa True gods, who make appearances here and there. There are mysterious ravens, there are signs to follow. And also you meet a bunch of crazy Vikings doing crazy Viking shit. Like I met a guy, I climbed a mountain just completely randomly to see what was at the top. And it turned out that there was a guy at the top. He was throwing all of his belongings over the edge to send them to Valhalla. He's an old guy, and he's like, can you help me? So I end up lifting all these boxes and hurling them off the cliff. And he talks to me and tells me his story, and says that his kids don't appreciate him. They're going to sell off all his worldly possessions. And he describes his possessions to you, like, this was given to me by the king. This was given to me by my Jarl for being a good Viking or whatever. So you help him throw all that stuff off the edge, and your character is saying, you sure you want to be doing this? And he's like, yeah, I am. And at the end, he's like, okay, thanks a lot. Here's a bow. Enjoy it. And then he just leaps off the edge to Valhalla himself, to follow his possessions into the void, into the roaring fires and feasts of Valhalla. And it was quite a shocking little moment and a funny little character moment, completely random, completely just non-essential, small character moment for anyone who happened to climb that mountain. There have been other ones too, like you meet a woman sitting by a waterfall who has dropped her ring into the water, and you have to swim down and get it for her. There are lots of suitors trying to do it, but none of them are finding it. It's a funny little story. And so there are all these funny little episodes, mini episodes, even in this opening area. And I'm finding it to be quite rich and quite fun. It's a very easy game so far. The combat is easier, and there is not that much combat unless you go looking for it. If you don't go looking for it, you can just ride around on your horse talking to people, doing little side quests, finding things. So that's what I've been doing. And I put another good 5 hours into Valhalla and really felt my brain just tuning in to that snowy landscape and those churning clouds. And I had a great time with it. So Like, much like I was saying just a moment ago, like, maybe I was a little hard on Valhalla when I first came to it because I was coming off the back of some pretty impressive open world games with a lot of depth. Valhalla does not have that depth, but it has other things, other qualities. So you can really just switch off your mind and enjoy it. And I think maybe I was a bit hard on it in hindsight. So I'm going to keep playing Valhalla. Maybe I will get to that stage where I'm halfway through England, having kind of conquered loads of different counties, and I'll get sick of it. But I will report back and tell you how I'm getting on with that game too. So those were two games that I played to relax and really enjoyed in the last week. But before I get to reviewing Ooblets, let me just mention that this show is patron supported. There is a little Discord community and a Patreon. You can join us at patreon.com/gaminginthewild. I do love the Discord community around the show. There's a really nice bunch of people just talking every day about what they're playing. At the moment, there's been some talk about Cursed to Golf. People are really enjoying that one. Kind of hitting a wall a little bit, actually. People were really enjoying it for a while, but seem to be hitting a bit of a difficulty wall, which is something that I've heard around. There is a patron playing Dinkum, the Australian life sim, cute, cozy game, which I'm quite curious about. I'm hoping to grab a code for that one and talk about it again in the future. There is a patron playing A Plague Tale Innocence, which is now leaving Game Pass ahead of the Plague Tale Requiem sequel later in this year. So people are picking up A Plague Tale to try and play that first game before it leaves Game Pass in a couple weeks. It's a really fun little community. You'd be very welcome to come and join us and to support this podcast. It's patreon.com/gaminginthewild if you're interested in that. One of the perks is bonus episodes, and I just put one out that's a mixtape of Icelandic music and some talk about traveling around Iceland, going to glaciers and the highlands and black sand beaches. So you would get that, and you get lots of other bonus episodes too if you want to join the Patreon. Thanks to all my existing patrons, and thanks very much to you if that's something that you're interested in. I will also say a big thank you to everyone that is giving a star rating to the podcast on Spotify and a review on Apple Podcasts. I see them all and I appreciate them all, and it helps the show out. So thank you very much for that. And with all of that said, let's move on and talk about the featured game of this episode, Ooblets. So Ooblets is a game that came out this year. It's by a developer called Glumberland. It's been in early access for 2 years on Steam. So this game has been around. It's been around. People have been playing it. They've been refining it, getting it ready for release. It's now out on the consoles as well. I played it on Switch, where it performed, you know, pretty well. Well enough. No major complaints there. It doesn't have a time yet on how long to beat, I guess, because it came out just 2 days ago. But it's one of those grindy games. It's one of those games where it's not necessarily about seeing credits, although there is a strong story element to this game. I get the feeling that it's one of those games that people are just going to rack the hours into, for people that like it, you know what I mean? It's been getting mixed reviews on Metacritic. It's got 73 from 10 reviews. It's a pretty mixed response, from 5 out of 10 through to, I think, 88 was the highest score. And the developers describe it as a pretty weird game about farming, creature collection, and dancing. And my short and sweet description of this one is that it's an easy and addictive Stardew meets Pokemon game that seems to consist almost entirely of rough edges. So this isn't going to be a glowingly positive review, but I am going to have some pleasant things to say about this game. It's a bit of a strange one. I've had highs and lows with it, and I like the game a lot, but I have got like paragraphs of notes about it. There is a lot of stuff that I found confusing in the game, but I did keep playing it, and I still keep playing it. I look forward to, you know, bedtime. I play it an hour before bed, just lying with my Switch, pretty much every night since I've picked it up. So it's definitely got something, but there is just a lot to be said about it. So I'm looking forward to pulling this game apart a little bit for you. And I would love to hear what you have to say about it. If you've played Ooblets, you can find me anywhere on social media as Gaming in the Wild. Please do tell me what you think of this game. I'm really curious what other players are making of this game. So what is it? It's a Stardew meets Pokemon village simulator. Your character arrives to start a new life in the seaside village of Badge Town. I guess so called because people give each other badges when they become friends. If you do friend quests for people and fulfill requests, you get badges. Bit of a bad name for the town. I mean, I feel like any random pub table brainstorm could have come up with something better than Badge Town. But Badge Town it is. What are you going to do? And when you arrive, the town is in disarray. It's been disowned by the mysterious Ooblet High Council. It's no longer getting newspaper deliveries. It's been cut off from the rest of civilization. And people in the town kind of feel like the town doesn't exist anymore in a strange way. They don't know why. They're trying to find out. The mayor is on a quest to try and find out why the Ooblet High Council seems to have just erased the town. And when you arrive, you meet the mayor, and she's like, hello, you're a new person. I need new people. Please take this vacant farm plot. It's just sitting there. Put it to work. Bring some life to the town. And so you start helping fixing up the farm, growing things, talking to people, making friends. When you talk to people, your friendship meter goes up over time. So you get to know the characters around the town. There's just maybe like 15 or 20 characters that just meander around the town all day. And you meet them every day, every game day. It has a day-night cycle. You go to bed, you get up, you do a day, you go to bed again. You get points at the end of the day for all the things that you've done. People have different little quips and things to tell you on different days. The weather changes, that kind of thing. So it's all very cozy, all very nice. And you have to walk around the town, help fix up the town, help fix people's problems, and eventually try to untangle the larger mystery of what is going on in Badge Town. And this game looks pretty nice. It has a very clean visual style. It looks a little bit like the Untitled Goose Game. Almost rotoscoped animations, like naturalistic looking animations, but shaded out in single colors like a cartoon strip. So it's very clean and appealing and nice to look at. It's very jolly. I'm not exactly sure what you call this camera angle. It's not top down, like directly from above. It's not isometric, which is kind of on the tilt, with everything at 45 degrees facing the camera. It's a little like the Zelda camera angle. What do we call that exactly? If anyone knows, please let me know. I'm always trying to describe this camera angle, and I'm always going around the houses like I just did, but it's roughly top-down in that Zelda-style way. The sound and music in this game isn't quite up to scratch, I would say. I think that in cute games like this, good music can go a long way. It's something that we saw in games like A Short Hike, where the soundtrack is kind of iconic and a big part of the mood of the game, and it gives it this lovely, meandering, slightly dreamy summer holiday feel. In this game, all of the music is quite basic, quite repetitive, quite twee, like annoyingly, insistently upbeat. A bit of a missed opportunity, I would say. I think that different music could have helped this game out. I ended up playing with the sound down most of the time, listening to a podcast, and there isn't voice acting. There's like that Animal Crossing burbling speech. And that's pretty rare for me, you know. I really like sound and music in games, and I consider it to be a big part of the experience. But this game being the light kind of experience that it is, I liked the gameplay, I liked looking at it, and so I just turned it down and I listened to a podcast. If you are the kind of person that likes a podcast game, in scare quotes, then this could be one of those. And so what's the gameplay like? It's like an amalgam of comfortably familiar mechanics that we've seen before. You will buy seeds, you will farm crops, which includes clearing and tilling earth, planting, watering, weeding, harvesting, waiting for things to come to fruition. You can then sell your crops at the local store and buy more seeds with the money and use the profit to do other things like expand your farming equipment, to buy cosmetics, furniture, clothing for yourself. I'm not normally one for cosmetics in games. I like meaningful upgrades. I like to feel like I'm making genuine progress in games. But I will say that, like, even for my cold heart, when it comes to this subject, the clothes are really cute, man. Like, I got this silly bear hat that's like got ears on it, giant sunglasses, a big witch hat, and like some stripy top and stuff. So even as someone that doesn't like cosmetics that much, I got a really colorful rug for my house. They're pretty good in this game, actually. They actually do liven it up. And because you're running around such a tight loop all the time, spending a lot of time looking at your house interior, your farm yard, and your character, it really is quite nice to buy stuff to make the game look better. So maybe Ooblets gave me a little taste of why people buy cosmetics in games, something that I never really understand. And as well as the farming, you can grow Ooblets. Ooblets are little cute monsters that follow you around. They're knee high. They come in all different colors and shapes and sizes and personalities. You can have, I think, 6 or 7 following you any one time. You can have a couple in your farmyard. You can build houses for them. Ooblets are to be found wandering around in the village, and everyone that you meet will have Ooblets with them. So it's a little like Pokemon, I guess, in that respect. I will admit up front that I have never played a Pokemon game. And so for this being such a clearly Pokemon-inspired game, I don't have a level of insight about how it compares to Pokemon. But you get these little pets, these little Ooblets who follow you around. They're cute, they're jaunty. And rather than battling them against other people, you have dance battles. So they don't fight anyone, but rather you can line up against someone if you need to resolve a dispute, or you can tempt Ooblets in the wild to come and dance battle with you by throwing food at them. And how this works is that you line up, you get to pick a few of your Ooblets in your active team, and then your Ooblets have cards. They have abilities that manifest as cards. Like, my favorite one is this little toadstool guy, and his dance moves just get a lot of points very quickly. Then there's like a prickly little guy who can kind of debuff the opposing team and fluster them. And you get all of your little Ooblets have different strategic uses, and they get different cards. They level up with XP every time you fight with them, whether you win or lose, and you unlock more cards the further leveled up that they are. So you'll get a few MVP Ooblets that are your main go-tos, but then you can always get new Ooblets, because if you battle wild Ooblets, if you win, they produce a seed for you. So if you see some Ooblets flying around that look like birds, you can go and dance battle with them. If you win, you'll get a seed. You can plant that seed and grow an Ooblet. When it's ready, you pick it and you have a bird Ooblet level 1 in your potential range of Ooblets to fight with then. So you're constantly growing your menagerie of Ooblets in the game. Also, you walk around the town talking to people. Whenever you talk to someone, you increase your friendship a little. They're very silly. The dialogue is silly. It's surreal. It seems that most of the people are kind of, I don't know what to say, they're meandering through life and they've got strange concerns. One of them keeps saying, I got an NDA from my houseplant or something like that. So there's all these kind of modern terms woven into these one-liners. It's all a bit silly and fun. You can also cook. Your character needs to nap or to eat to regain energy. You use energy to do everything, like picking vegetables or running. So you need to constantly keep an eye on your energy, which does go down very quickly. A little bit more on that later. Bit of a busted system, one of several in this game, I would say. You can also forage. You can forage up seashells on the seashore. You can pick fruit from trees. You can pick plants, that kind of thing. You can break down logs to get sticks, which you use as a resource. There is a fishing game, although in this game it's bad. You only just cast and then wait, and then something pops out. You never catch fish, only gardening supplies. Completely weird fishing game. But as you progress, as you complete quests for people, as you get your crops up and running and profit starts to come in, you can open up new buildings, you can fix up existing ones for people, you can open up several new wild areas and biomes where there are more story beats, where there are more Ooblets to catch, and the mystery of what's going on in your town continues. You have to go around this little world to different villages, turning on the Oobnet, which is basically the internet, to try and find out what is happening in this world. So there is a larger quest that you can do as well. And I have to say, I've largely enjoyed playing this game almost despite the game. There are so many issues with it, and so many little niggles, and so many rough edges, and strange clunky UIs, and just glaring issues that kind of mar the game. It's a very unusual feeling because I like it, but I also would probably give it like a 5 or a 6 out of 10 if I was reviewing it. And yet I'm still playing it for an hour a night. So this is a very unusual feeling for me. It's a bit of a conflicted opinion. So in the second half of this review, I'm going to comb through it. I'm going to comb through the highs and lows, talk about what's right about this game and the many things that are wrong with it, and try and get to the bottom of exactly what is going on with Ooblets. So this is the part of the show where I normally finish up by running through the good parts and the bad parts of a game and then give a final conclusion. But most of my notes for this game were in the bad column, which is pretty unusual. Normally, if I don't like a game, I will put it into the intro. I'll mention it, but I won't give it a full review. This game felt like it needed that because I played a lot of it this week, to be honest. It's one of the games that I played the most. And I have some pretty developed opinions about it. So I'm going to run through some of the issues that I had with this game, and then I'm going to finish up with why I like it, why I kept playing it, and the conclusion. So while this game is chill and fun, I would say that lots of the actual things that you're doing, the actions and the mechanics, feel in some way counterintuitive or clunky or underdeveloped and insubstantial, or just disappointing. And they're still fun because they're just simple and basic, and it's also colourful and easy to just zone out and run around. But a lot of the time I was doing that, I was kind of frowning at the screen when I actually had to do something. So what am I talking about exactly? Well, the mechanics of the game. Let's start there. One of the central mechanics of this game, it is called Ooblets. It is about Ooblets. It's about your little creatures. They are the focus of the game in a way. You use them for the dance battles, you're farming them. When you have a disagreement, when you have to get past someone to advance the story, that will usually take the form of an Ooblet battle. And the Ooblet High Council are central to the story, as far as I've gotten at least. And so you would think that the Ooblets themselves would be, you know, central. But the dance battle card game in Ooblets is really bad. It's really, really bad. I've played a lot of card games at this point. I like, you know, from Slay the Spire through to Griftlands to simpler things like Iris and the Giant, to weird things like Inscription. There's a lot of card games out there. And in this one, it's a card game with almost no strategy or meaning, I would say. I have won games just by playing every card I was dealt. In no particular order, whilst barely looking at the screen, because I was just listening to a podcast with one eye on the Switch. That happens repeatedly. You can coast through the battles here. You always seem to have better cards than your opponents. You always seem to have more turns. Strategy is minimal. You have cards that get you points. You have hype cards that will boost those points. The more hype you have, the more points you get for each card. You can curse the opponent, basically, by flustering them or stunning them. And that's pretty much it. I would say that I've fought 50 card battles in this game. I've lost twice. I would say that when I lost, it was solely down to just bad luck with the draw. Like an opponent stunning me so many times that I couldn't play cards, for example. Like a random bad luck event meant that I lost a couple of bouts. The other ones I just coasted through and won entirely. So the central card game is barely there in a way, which is a bit of a bummer. And that goes for some of the other mechanics too. You know, in these kind of games, the farming and the fishing and the cooking are all very central to what you're doing, and they should be fun in and of themselves. As I've mentioned before, the fishing in this game, I mean, I don't know what this is. You press a button to cast. Usually in a game like this, your float will bob. You'll know that there is a time to strike, get the fish on the hook, and then you'll have a little battle to reel it in. In this game, you press the cast button, you wait. You could put your Switch down if you want. A couple of seconds later, you'll pull something out. Never a fish, always farming supplies, and that's it. You press cast, you wait. You get something, you press cast again. It's not a fishing game. It's completely bizarre. It's not even a quick time event. It's like a sub quick time event piece of non-gameplay. very bizarre, just pulling trash out of the water with one button push. I'm aghast. I'm aghast at this fishing game. I would also say that the cooking in this game is bad. For example, in many games, you can combine ingredients to get interesting results or bad results, and you have like a fun cooking animation. You get something weird. Maybe the good results go into your recipe book. The bad results, you just turn to ash and you throw them away. Or you use that for something else, like to, you know, fertilize your farm or something. I don't know. In this game, you just, if you have enough wheat and crops, you can make a hot dog. If you don't, you can't. There is barely any animation at all. It really is more like, a joyless spending of hard-earned resources in order to fuel your energy than it is a fun cooking game with experimentation and lively animations and surprising results. It's like the opposite of Breath of the Wild, where you can cook anything with anything and always get something. So the cooking is bad. The farming is not great either. You have to water your plants way too often. They dry out very quickly. Your watering can runs out of water constantly. You have to run to the tap after watering 10 squares. And if you've got 50, that's 5 every time you run to the tap. If you water your patch twice a day, you know, that's 10 times running to and from the tap. It's just pretty boring. And then you get a sprinkler finally. And I was like, oh my God, thank God, a sprinkler. It turns out it just waters 3 squares. And as I said, if you've got 50, it's not even making a dent, and it takes up a square, so it doesn't fit neatly into the center of your crop, spraying everything around it. It's like a little squirt gun that just squirts 3 squares. What is with that sprinkler? Seriously. So all of these central mechanics, which form the core of what you're doing in the game, are individually taken bad. And that's quite an indictment on the game, I would say. The other stuff that you're doing, the buying and selling and your energy, these feel to me like economy. And so in a game where you're farming, buying, selling, buying seeds, selling crops, etc., the economy is important. You have to feel like you're making money. The money has to feel meaningful. And in this game, the rewards do not feel great enough for the grind. It feels like an unbalanced economy of effort where you're grinding away to grow plants that sometimes take, you know, 4 to 5 to 6 in-game days just to blossom, during which you're running around fishing, doing the crap fishing game and all of that other stuff. And then you don't get much money for them, or you need them for a quest. Like you need 10 carrots to make someone happy to open a door for you, and you never get to sell them. So it felt to me like the economy of this game is busted. Like things take too long to grow. Seeds are too expensive, and you don't sell produce for enough money to make it feel like you are making progress. You don't feel like you're getting anywhere. There's a bit of a hamster wheel feel to it. And I've got a feeling that some folks will not mind that at all, because they are mostly in it for the doing rather than the progress. So if you're a farming game fan, you just like farming and that's the reward in itself. For me, I want to be growing the farm. I want to be progressing through the game. And in this game, I felt like I was just treading water, just keeping my head above water. Not ideal, really. So the economy is busted. As for the ooblets themselves, you have to pay resources to dance battle wild ooblets. And in the early game, resources are hard to come by, as I've described. Like, seeds are expensive. They take a long time to grow. And you have a finite amount of ooblets you can have with you. I think you can have 6 or 7 with you in person, a couple on the farm. And then you get a wild area where you can just set ooblets free to run around and go and claim them again later. And I felt pretty disincentivized to actually do the dance battles because I needed my resources to try and buy more seeds or to finish a quest. And so spending them on ooblets when I was already maxed out the amount of ooblets that I had, and I was happy with my level 6 mushroom guy and my level 5 thorn guy, didn't really want to build up a whole new ooblet from scratch anyway. Like, there's no incentive for me to do that, really. At least not yet, as far as I've gotten into the game. So I felt disincentivized to actually engage in the dance battles, which aren't fun anyway. Pretty strange. When I did get new seeds, I quickly maxed out the number of ooblets that I could have. And so I had loads of fully grown ooblet plants ready to be plucked for new ooblets to be born, which should be the most fun moment of the game. It's that catching the Pokemon moment. but I couldn't open them. I didn't have space for them. You can make little houses for your ooblets, and you can decorate them on the inside. Your character pokes their head inside. It's very cute, and you can put little furniture for them and dress them up and stuff. But it costs so much to make a house, so much resource. You need rare resources to make one. It's not easy. It's like the opposite of Cult of the Lamb, where before long I had sleeping bags for 20 cult members that turned into tents and so forth, and it all felt effortless and right. It was like, I'm doing the work, I'm getting the reward in Cult of the Lamb. In this game, I was doing the work and not getting the reward. So I have one ooblet house. I haven't put any decorations in there because it seems like a waste of resources compared to finishing quests and getting new seeds. And so I didn't end up getting many ooblets or housing many ooblets. And as for catching them and then releasing them into the wild, that's just a pure waste of resources, really. So you're disincentivized from collecting ooblets in the game Ooblets, which is bizarre. Maybe the biggest beef of all, and I realize this is turning into a tirade, so I'm sorry if you tune in to hear me talk about nice games and recommend things to you. This is a negative review. It will loop back around at the end. I have more good things to say about Ooblets. I'm just running through the many confusing ways that this game fails. Overall, I don't think the game fails. It's bizarre. Like, all of these individual mechanics fail, but overall, the game is quite fun. It's just strange. So the next one is character energy. Your character has an energy bar. It depletes every time you do something, every time you shake a tree, pull up a crop, weed a field. Every time you fish, it costs a little bit of energy. It goes down way too fast. And when you eat a snack, it goes up by 10 or 20%. So food is not worth the effort it takes to create. If you nap, you get about 20% of your energy back, which is gone again in about 1 minute. So the character is constantly tired. You can buy coffees, but they're expensive. They just soak up your resources. Again, a busted economy. Re-energizing takes up too much resource and effort. Napping should give you a full health bar back and you just lose time. That would be a much wiser way to do this. You can sleep through the night and you start with a full health bar in the morning. But within 3 or 4 minutes of garden work, it was gone again. And I was having to scavenge around to make flour, to make hot dogs, which gave me back 10% of the bar. And it was just tiresome. It interrupts gameplay. Lots of times I slept 4 times in a row in order to be able to do something and then went to bed for the night. Really, really silly. I would also say there's lots of strange UI in this game. Like, for example, in your inventory, which you're navigating constantly to find seeds to plant, to find your tools, to find things to sell. The icons are tiny. You can barely tell them apart, really. They don't have a good visual language. They could have been much bigger and had much more character. They could have been sorted into seeds, resources, tools, or auto-sorted. None of that happens. So you just have this mixed-up inventory of tiny icons. When you are hovering over one, the text description pops up and blocks half of the inventory, so you can't see what's next to the thing that you're looking at. It's really bad. The same goes for the UI when it comes to looking at your clothing, furniture, your missions. There is no map in your journal where all of this stuff is stored. There is just one map in the center of town. People move around the village. Sometimes you need to find a specific person. Having a map in your journal where you could see where people were would be incredibly useful. But no, you have to go and look at the town map. Why? I have no idea, honestly. The whole journal needs to be torn up and started again. It's badly designed. So there we go. It's a pretty strange game. Like, all of the individual elements need work. It's bizarre how many of them are underdeveloped or off in some way. And I spent a lot of time in Ooblets playing it and just making these observations. Like, I wonder why they did that. I wonder why it's like this. I wonder what decision led it to be this way and not the clearly much better way that it could have been and has been in many other games of this type. Why are these icons so small? Why aren't they big and visible? Why don't they read well? The visual design, like, what was the thinking here? And so I was puzzling over that as I was playing. It was like a low-level subroutine running in the background as I was playing the game, everything feeling creaky and crunchy and off. It was a weird one, but then again, you see, the good stuff. The game is cozy, it's undemanding, there is no violence, the dance battles are, you know, pacifist competition. It has this sort of cute baby language that's just, you know, very comfortable and childlike. It's colourful. The Untitled Goose Game look is very clean. The animation is lovely. The costumes are good. The visual style is great. It's a very easy game. It's impossible to fail, really. Even if you lose, there is no real penalty. So the challenge is really in min-maxing and getting your farm up and running. It's charming. People say really silly things constantly. There are some characters that I'm quite fond of, like this clown who just says completely random stuff and wanders around the village and is apparently the former mayor of the town. It kind of caricatures millennial concerns in some way, like everyone's talking about social media and clothing and kind of interpersonal difficulties and imposter syndrome. So that's the kind of tone that runs throughout the game. The relaxing central loop is really nice, you know, waking up in the morning, going, doing a bunch of stuff, going to sleep, getting points. It's kind of pleasant, and I had fun doing it. There are tasks that you can do, but there's no real time pressure on anything, which I really like. It's very easy to lose several hours just doing loops of the village, going to other regions, going to other biomes, finding new things to do. There are certain times where you open up a new house and inside you'll find a new quest giver and you'll get new activities, much like the old ones, but still something fresh to do. There's a lot of content here, even if it is somewhat grindy in nature. And if you like those Stardew type games or Pokemon type games, this is a brand new version of that. And maybe you'll like it, you know. But for all of the negative things that I've said, I think a lot of it comes down to design choices and a lot of it comes down to game feel. And game feel is a kind of intangible word that seems to mean different things to different people, but largely means like the sensation of interacting with a game, like the fine qualities of interacting with a game, how it feels to navigate a game. Do you feel friction points or does it feel effortless? How do things hang together? How does the tone hang together with the controls? How do the controls hang together with the story? All of this different stuff that consists of the experience of the game and the qualities that it has. And the game feel in this game is pretty busted. It's creaky and crunchy. It feels like a game that needs early access. And that's a strange thing to say because it was in early access for 2 whole years. I can only assume that that was a process of killing bugs, because the kind of things that you would get feedback on in early access are like, I can't see the menu items, or the text box is covering the thing I need to look at. These are the kind of things that early access is really for. I think it's for smoothing out those little details and to really hone in on what that game is, you know. And so this game feels like it needs to go back into early access, maybe in a different way or something, you know what I mean? There's a great game in here, struggling to get out. And what can I say? I'm still playing it an hour a night. I'm enjoying my time with it. But it is a weird position to be in, to quite like a game, but just think that there is so much wrong with it. I'm not sure I've ever quite been in this position before. So it succeeds as a chill game. It succeeds as a semi-mindless, farmy village game. But it could be so much more, you know? And maybe it will be one day. I get the feeling it's the kind of game that could become popular. It is in the zeitgeist of what people are enjoying to play, especially on the Switch. So maybe this is a work in progress. Let's see what the future holds. That's Ooblets. So that was my review of Ooblets. I hope you enjoyed it. A bit more negative than usual, but what are you going to do? Those were my honest feelings of the game. I would love to hear what you think of Ooblets if you've played it. If you've played it in early access, I would love to hear from you. I would love to hear what changed during that time. If you've just picked up the game and whether you're liking it or not, please do let me know what you're thinking. You can find me on Twitter @GamingInTheWild. I'm also on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, elsewhere. You can email me at johnisgaminginthewild@gmail.com. Now that I'm here at the end of the show, I notice I had a little couple of notes that I was supposed to talk about at the start and didn't. One of them was to talk about the Cult of the Lamb patch. Cult of the Lamb has had a V1.01 patch that apparently iron out a lot of the things that I had trouble with. A lot of the bugs are gone. They have an extensive list of over 50 bugs that they've patched out. So if you heard my review of Cult of the Lamb, it might be safer to play it now. You might have a better time. I really rate that game. So I'm happy to see like a quick patch taking care of all that stuff. I was also supposed to say that I've added Rogue Legacy 2 to my long list of games to play. Thank you very much to the developers for sending me a code for that one. I got in touch and said, I've been hearing some really good things about Rogue Legacy 2. It's only on Steam and Xbox currently. It's not on Game Pass. But I've heard some people singing its praises, talking about it as a possible item on their Games of the Year list. And so I thought, I think I'd like to try that. I didn't play Rogue Legacy 1, but I do have a place in my heart for that kind of game. So I'm adding that to my slate. A few games came out on Game Pass that I was also going to mention. Immortality by Sam Barlow is out now. It's getting 10 out of 10 reviews, including a 10 out of 10 from Edge. I think it's only the 24th game to get that mark. So it joins things like Super Mario Odyssey and Ocarina of Time, which, you know, that's pretty big news if Edge gives a 10. A game called Tinykin also came to Game Pass. A Pikmin-style puzzle platformer. People are absolutely loving Tinykin, so I'm fully planning to play that one. You'll be hearing about that one on the show in the next couple of weeks. Also, Immortals Fenyx Rising came to Game Pass. That's the Breath of the Wild-inspired open-world Ubisoft game based on Greek myths. It's got a sense of humour about it. It's packed with puzzles and things to do. It goes on a little bit in that Ubisoft style. It's like it runs out of mechanics, but still has, you know, two-thirds of the landmass that you're yet to conquer, having seen what it has to offer, really. So there's a little bit of that Ubisoft problem in it of too much game. But I had a really good time with Immortals Fenyx Rising, and if you happen to be someone that is looking forward to Breath of the Wild 2, or whatever they call that sequel, which is now coming out in 2023, then Immortals Fenyx Rising could scratch that itch for you. It's a good game. It's a really nice one. It actually improves on Breath of the Wild in some gameplay elements, even if it lacks that epic scope and sweep that make that game so transcendent and so special. It's like a mini baby Breath of the Wild Ubisoft version, and is a good time as such. So check it out if that sounds good to you. So I'll be back next week with another review. Maybe it'll be Slime Rancher. Maybe it will be Rogue Legacy 2. Maybe it will be Tinykin or Immortality. Lots of great games to play on the slate. If you would like to come and join the show's Patreon and talk to us all in Discord, it's patreon.com/gamingintheWild. I've been John. This has been Gaming in the Wild. Take care of yourselves and each other. And bye-bye for now.